which simply claims that your obligation in doing the mitzvah is not fulfilled until the levavos, until the lev is manifest in every action that you do. We speak of three realms: machshava, maase, and dibur, the thought process, right? The oral part of it, and the actual action. That the action, your maase, is stripped of all of its life unless the machshava is there. The maase is the guf, and the machshava is the neshama. You don't have a living corporate being, a true mitzvah, until you join the two. That's the whole Kovas Havavos. It happens to be translated in English also.
Now we have to go out and do it.
But you see, look.
I mean, it's
yeah. So, in Rabbeinu Bachai on Shmos, when Moshe Rabbeinu is shown the burning bush, the snare b'le'er b'esh, the obvious question is, if Moshe Rabbeinu was of the capability of hearing Nevuah, the prophecy, face to face, why does the Rebbeinu Shalom have to go ahead and resort to such a lowly way of communicating? First, gain his attention, a bush is burning, he sees that it's extinguished, and he comes over, and his curiosity is such, and then all of a sudden, he hears a voice. Rabbeinu Bachai says, even though it's Moshe Rabbeinu, Mipnei She'ata, at this point in Moshe Rabbeinu's career, Hayetak Chilat Nevuat Moshe, this is the beginning of his prophetic career, is Ratzah Kadosh Baruch Hu L'chanechol Ma'at Ma'at. You don't go ahead and boom, give it to him, all 480 volts. Hey, this is me, Aspaklaria HaMe'ira, this is my reflection, this is what you're going to have to see all the time, whammo. But it has to be Ma'at Ma'at. You got to do it slowly but surely, Ulahaloto, and ultimately to bring him in Madrega la Madrega, to go from level to level, Ad Sheyid Chazek Sichlo, until internally the Sechel, in other words, the faculty, the human faculty that absorbs all of this, is capable of absorbing it.
Even with a Moshe Rabbeinu.
Even with a Moshe Rabbeinu. Is Allahat Kama Vakama with a child or a novice of any sort. As great as the mind of a child is, you're not going to want to overburden that mind too prematurely, because you're going to break it otherwise. And it's a matter of progression, and probably this progression is something which is obsessional with me. That you've got to go from step A to step B. You cannot go from step A. Well, that is assumed that it is without end. But when you progress in the system of Torah, it's got to be from step A to the logical progression of step B. You cannot rise to the 15th step, and let's assume that step is going to be a gargle and a whatever, and a strangle. You can't rise instantaneously. You've got to be able to progress with these things one by one, and everything in its place. There are priorities. Now, in terms of priorities of Shmiras HaMitzvos, there is no question in my mind that the first priority is with the mechanical.
Just learning how to do it.
Just the mechanical part. Now, go on. Okay? Tragically, and this is what you're saying, that we are frozen at the mechanical. We don't begin to understand what else is attendant with the mitzvah, and it doesn't show up in our personalities.
And that is the greatest criticism of the non-observant community on the Shomrei HaMitzvah.
There's no question about that, except for one thing, that the non-observant community is not a patch of white lilies. They have their problems also.
Right.
Okay.
Sure.
Their arrested development.
They themselves insist that we have to be better.
I'm saying. Yeah. You see, that I'll buy. That responsibility I will buy.
And they expect us to be better.
That I'll buy also.
if you are doing this because you believe that this is the truth, and truth is the better life,
and the life.
Absolutely right. If it hasn't brought us to this level, ni madrega le madrega, from step to step, and they haven't seen in us this kind of unfolding and development and evolution to higher and higher processes, then without question they're right, there's something that has gone awry. It truly is something that's gone awry. But then again, I must always stop for a moment, notwithstanding my own personal and intellectual difficulties that I would have with segments of the yeshiva world. When you look at it as a totality, you've got to say that inherent in that world is hopefully a better world order, a better social strategy than the rest of the world has, notwithstanding all of its imperfections at this point. And I don't believe that the world itself, the yeshiva world itself, is the source of the imperfections. I do believe it's the practitioners. As simple as that.
Well, how do you distinguish the world from its practitioners?
Well, the world meaning the system. I don't believe it's systemic. I do believe, however, that the problems are its practitioners. Because, again, to refer back, if I were to use Eric Hoffer's or categories that say that the system called organized religion must breed on hatred, must breed on suspicion, must breed on action that sometimes is unwarranted, or whatever else we have over there, must breed on persuasion that is joined to coercion. If it is systemic, then I have no right to really be a Jew. I don't believe that it is systemic. Mm-hmm. I do believe, however, it is when you realize the position of the people who are involved in that community and their insecurities and their fears and their neuroses and how they handle their lives and how they balance these fears, that you will see that hatred unifies them and that coercion does much more than persuasion and that suspicion unifies them. It gives them a sense of belonging rather than alienation. It's the people, it's the individual, it's not necessarily the system. The system is clear to me. That's clear.
Then are you implying that if Torah could be called in any sense the word a mass culture, which is hard to conceive of, except that you yourself said in the times of David HaMelech or Yechezki Yahu, that an 8-year-old in the streets of Yerushalayim knew more than the average person learned in Torah today?
No question.
So are you saying then that the Torah way of life would be the only mass movement that would have to violate the requirements of Eric Hoffer in his book describing these?
I really can't say that because I'm not really an expert in Eric Hoffer, or if there is such a thing.
Yeah.
What I am saying, however, is that if we took the Nazism out of the mass movement, and we took the communism out of the mass movement, and the fascism out of the mass movement, and we realized that these qualities, as has been observed, of hate and coercion and suspicion are sicknesses, that it only serves our own inadequacies. It doesn't build anything for us other than a sense of unity. Mm-hmm. We don't want to feel detached. Then automatically you have the perfect system, the mass movement. I don't mind the mass movement.
It's almost the contradiction. I mean, you'd have a large group of people observing Torah, but it could never be called a mass movement.
Fine. So I'm not worried about what you call it. I'm really not worried about what you call it, but in this particular reference, the Eric Hoffer situation, I was trying to show you that we live in the 20th century. We are in the post-Holocaust era, okay?
Mm-hmm.
And that even though we survived the Holocaust, because we are very much alive, that Holocaust has had a very an indelible effect on all of us by virtue of the fact that we have come into contact with what Nazism produced.
Mm-hmm.
This mass movement, we're alive, and so is communism alive. It has its effect on us, even though we're not communists. So we have to look at our, you know, we truly have to look at our relationship to this definition of a mass movement, particularly in the world of the yeshiva now in the 80s, which is a mass revivalist movement. It's a fundamentalist revivalist movement that is sweeping the broad masses on all levels and in all areas of society being affected by it.
Hmm.
This is the issue. So I cannot say that he's entirely true, but I certainly can give credence to his descriptions of how we are unified, what the unifying agents are. Now, to a greater or a lesser degree, all of these are operative within any one of our Torah communities that we have today. And it has to take the one who is capable of doing it from an intellectual point of view and just simply documenting it. Surely it can be documented in our community. I'm not saying that all six are operative, but at least three or four are operative. The persuasion coercion is certainly there. Imitation is certainly there. I've worked with Bali Chuma. Imitation is of the highest order. We all imitate, but what is the purpose? What is the kavana that you have by imitating? You know, what are the machshavos that you have by imitating? And that's what I'm talking about. And leadership and action in and of itself, there's absolutely nothing wrong with that. Charismatic leadership has got to be at the core of any and every Torah society. Kanoim, Amoroim, Goim, Rishonim, Achronim, Chassidish Rebbes, Litvish Rosh Yeshiva, these are charismatic leaders. And action, you know, to move, to get things done, to build, to perpetuate. What's wrong with that? These are unifying agents, no doubt about it. But, my Lord, you have to look at it from the Kavanas, from the real underpinning of what it serves, and it serves some very negative functions. Take Rabbi 11 and Tzadik Yerushalayim, surely realize this. That's why there was no subculture in Israeli society that didn't know him as a Tzadik, because Rankin once said it also. Politics is a given. If you have humanity and you have society, politics is a given. The only thing is, you have to be erlich in playing your politics. You have to be truly pure in playing your politics and not be a nerdy, filthy, corrupt politician. That's the problem. And it really didn't matter to him whether you were a politician in Mizrahi or a politician in Aguda. He said it openly. Zayela. Be trustworthy. Not a chameleon, not a prostitute. You have to marshal forces to be able to use that to get things going. But how can you be an erlich politician? The difference between a politician and a statesman. Simple as that. A statesman is a man of integrity. A politician is a low one. A politician is corrupt. A statesman is a man of superior dignity and broad vistas. That's the issue. How to be erlich.
Chassidus was designed to infuse the learning of Torah in the Shmiras HaMitzvahs with a new purity. Right? That sense of purity was in Yivdu Es Hashem B'Simcha.
Right.
Because in the generation of the Vilna Gaon, things became so mechanical and so dry. Just put it on and that's it, and don't worry about anything else. That century had several reactions to it. The reaction of Musa, the moral concomitant of any mitzvah, has got to be understood. Your motivation. Musa is nothing more than analysis.
But Yisrael Saranta was interested in analysis. You're putting it on. What's the story? Why are you putting on yourself? Chassidus was also a reaction. It was a mass movement, a reaction of the lower classes that said, I want an emotional identification with your intellectual process over here. The third one was Samson Raphael Hirsch, and that was his Torin Derech Eretz, a unity of personality of the religious and the secular. That nothing is really secular. Everything shall be made into religion. So, Hasidus went ahead and blossomed. Musar went ahead and blossomed, not to as great an extent, because it was more elitist than Hasidus. But then again, you got Rav Kook. Rav Kook, 50 years ago, writes, 60 years ago, writes to a very famous Chassid. He said, openly, he says, today, when we have this Prost of Frumkeit, this low level of religiosity, what does it mean? We're back to what Hasidus originally reacted to, and that is the mitzvah is stripped of its inner essence. Mm. And Hasidim are doing the same thing now, just they're doing it on a more intense level, you know, on a Hasidish level. You've got to understand that if you are a Hasid and you act like a Hasid, that after you do any and every mitzvah, after you finish a day al pi Hasidus, you are so invigorated and you're so ennobled, the likes of which you can't believe. Because there's a psychic energy that you bring to the learning and to the doing of the mitzvah that you don't have otherwise. And Hasidus has degenerated, he claims, to the point of being nothing else than the same status to which it originally reacted. So that's our problem.
So then you're saying in effect that it's a continual battle to keep the observance of Torah from simply being a mechanical phenomenon.
That's correct. And particularly with tefillin, it has to be seen in its sharpest focus, that the mitzvah of tefillin has got to become the paradigm of ideal shmiras ha-mitzvahs, the mechanical with the thought processes, the psychic, the emotional, the mental.
Which is all the more harder when you're trying to make the 7:30 change.
No, that's what I thought about. That's for sure. That's for sure. And we'll continue this as we go on to see what the story is.
Further in our conversation concerning the time element, the Zman element in Tfilin, I'd like to take a look at the Rambam in Hilchos Tfilin Perek Dalid, Halacha Yud Aleph. And that as an introduction to the work that we were doing in the Orach HaShulchan. Rambam writes in Halacha Yud Aleph, Mi Shehiniach Tfilin Kodem Shetishka Hachama. Before Shkia, you put on tefillin. And it's probably towards the end of the day, v'choshcha alav, and the sun already has set, it's become dark. Afidu hein alav kol halayla, under these circumstances, even if you'll be wearing it all night, is mutar. You haven't violated the issue of zman and the issue of not wearing tefillin at night. Why? Because this is my contention, this is what I've been saying, you know, last year the same way, that time is not intrinsic to tefillin. It serves a function as to when we do wear it and when we don't wear it. But it's not intrinsic to the mitzvah. It isn't the same way time is to Shabbos, or time is to a lulav on Sukkot, or time is to latkes on Chanukah. I mean, because latkes on, if you don't eat latkes on Chanukah, you haven't observed Chanukah, right? He eat latkes on Thursday, it's not Chanukah. The comedy aside, a lulav, any other time, but that time of Tes Vov, in that week of Nisan, from Tes Vov Nisan on, any other time is not a lulav and an esrog. It's simply a plant. It doesn't. It does. It's not a mechayev. It doesn't force you. It doesn't obligate you to make brachas. It's not a mechayev to do a mitzvah. It doesn't obligate you to do the mitzvah of lekachten lachem, or whatever the case may be. Tefillin is different here.
Tzitzis? What we say on that?
As far as tzitzis is concerned, if it's a mitzvah saseh shazman grama or not, so that was the famous machlokas between the Rambam and Rashi. Rambam and the Rosh, whether beged laila ksus yom and ksus laila,
right.
There that we are closer to see that tzitzis is probably as a mitzvah more intrinsic has zman more intrinsically. But again, it's a wide open machlokas between the Rosh. You know, is it chovas gavra? Is it the person who is required to have tzitzis? Or is it chovas mano? Is it the object that is required to have tzitzis? You see. But time is closer there. Here, Rambam tells you right here, I mean, he is the one who defines this. You have it on during the day, but you leave it on until nighttime, you haven't violated anything. However, why don't we therefore keep it on? Ein morim davar zeh l'rabim. The only time you tell this to a person is when you sit locked into a shiur where you're able to understand this issue of zmanim and this concept of zman in relationship to tefillin. Why? Because they're going to abuse it. Ela melamdim es hakol, for the broad masses, what you teach is shelo yanichu tefillin alehem balayla. Comes night, you take off tefillin. Yachaltzu otam mishatishkach hama. Take it off at shkia, and that's about it. Because any other time, any other way with the masses, you're going to find abuses. And the major abuse, we will yet see it, and that is falling asleep in it. The second case is, if someone to begin with may not have had tefillin, and deduces from what we just said that when he gets tefillin and it's after shkia, he goes ahead and he puts it on for that day, over belav, here, under these circumstances, according to the Rambam, he violates a lav. Shenemar v'shamata es achuka hazos miyomim yomim. Based on the Gemara that we learned many, many months ago in Menachos, that you have to keep v'shamata es achuka hazos miyomim yomim, even though it's a pasuk, the pshat of it deals with Korban Pesach, but it applies to, you know, by gezer shava, to by association and analogy, it applies to our tefillin in that parsha, miyomim yomima, it's a daytime mitzvah, and therefore tefillin is only a daytime mitzvah, so you don't start at night. Now there is no contradiction in the second halach, in the second part, to the first, and you should not be confused as if that he is contradicting himself.
The point then is simply that if you're wearing the tefillin, there's no isur at night to keep them on.
Correct. And the fact that we take it off is only because of abuse of the masses. But to put it on to begin with at night, at least according to the Rambam, you would be violating a lav. Not everyone agrees with the Rambam, as we'll soon see. Okay? That's the Rambam. In the Aruch HaShulchan Simon Lamed, Aruch HaShulchan Simon Lamed, Seif Dalad, the Aruch HaShulchan picks up on this and writes that there are those who disagree with the Rambam. And not only that, Hasmag, Sefer Mitzvahs Gadol. Poskuka Rabbi Akiva, Mishum de Rabbi Ashi Sover Kain. In the Gemara, Rabbi Akiva and also Rabbi Ashi say that what? Laila Sover Kain, Velaila Min HaTorah Sman Tfilin. That if you look at the psukim, the way they are learned by Rabbi Akiva and in the Gemara and Menachos over there,
And indeed, Laila is the same time in its propriety to have tefillin on as daytime. Rak midrabanan asru lahaniach lechatchila b'layla. And this is only midrabanan. Why? Shema yishan b'hem. Maybe you'll fall off to sleep. When you fall off to sleep in tefillin, that is a degradation to tefillin. V'chein pasku batur u'bashulchan aruch. Zeh l'shan Rabbeinu HaBeis Yosef. This is the Beis Yosef in Tur, Yisiv Beis. Quoting the Beis Yosef, asur lahaniach tefillin b'layla. Why? Only because Shema Yishkachem v'yishan b'hem. But, as the Rambam said, v'im hi nicham kodem shetishkachama v'chashcha alav afilu heim alav kol halayla is mutar. Just ein morim kein. Adds the Aruch HaShulchan b'rabim tzarech l'chaltzav. To make sure, to be certain, that this halacha does not get confused when you're together, let's say, when do we wear tefillin at the end of the day? The only time I know today is Tisha B'av, correct? Mm-hmm. We come half an hour before Shkia, and start coming three quarters of an hour before Shkia. What would happen, let's say, we're in a town where we didn't have a minyan on time? And 20 minutes before Shkia, we had a minyan. A minyan is going to take a lot longer than 20 minutes. Mm-hmm. It's going to take at least 30, 35 minutes. So it's after Shkia, okay? You figure you'll keep on your tefillin. Says Yoruch HaShulchan Barabim Tzarech L'chalso. Come Shkia, you got to take it off. Now why? What is he saying? Why? Because in a Rabim, no one's going to go to sleep. It's only a Yachid who may put it on and then go to sleep. Nonetheless, he says, Barabim Tzarech L'chalso, in keeping with what we learned, that for the masses, you don't go ahead and allow them to keep filling on after Shkia. V'im lo chalatz tefilav misha shaka'ach hama mipnei shelo haya lo mokom l'shamram. But if he wears it into the night because there's no way that he's going to keep, he doesn't have a place where to store them, v'nim tse'u alav kevei l'shamran, and the only reason he's wearing it at night is in order to make sure the cover of the tefillin is protected, is mutar, there's no question about it that it is proper. Umarimken, and you tell the Amorites this. Ad kan l'shono, up until here, is what the Beis Yosef says. So the Beis Yosef shows it you both ways, that the whole reason for not wearing it at night is to be able to fall asleep, in case you fall asleep. If you wear it at night because that's the best way that you're going to be able to protect its kedusha, then you can go ahead even then and wear it at night. Tzarich sheyomar. But under these circumstances, he must declare she'oseh kedei l'shamram. He must say to everyone around that this is why he is doing this. V'gam Rambam kosav dinim elu. Rambam also agrees with this. V'hine in kedei l'shamram mefaresh b'gemara demutar afilu ilayla lav zman tefillin kemo she'amarnu. Now if you go ahead and say that in order to protect tefillin, to protect tefillin, you can go ahead and declare that you're going to wear it, and wear it at night, and it's mutar, according to the Gemara. Aval hadin harishon, the first din that we learned, the im chashcha alav mutar ve'ein marim kein, the first din in the Rambam, that if he's wearing it, even though it is mutar, if he was wearing it during the day, when he put it on, there was no problem, and he was still wearing it at night. And what did he say? Ve'ein marim kein? That you don't tell anyone this way? How's that possible? Lama kasav. Habig mara havazer rak lemandis hirolei lalazman tefillin. There's a problem. If you go back to the Gemara, you don't understand the Rambam, because the whole reason that we said that you take off tefillin is because in the Gemara, those who held that Lila loves man tefillin, Lila is not the time of tefillin, that's why you should take it off. That's why we wrote. That's why we passed in that you should take it off at night. But if the Rambam here, is saying here that if to keep it on at night, you can keep it on if it's to watch. So, you know, whom are you passing according to? Are you passing according to those who allow you to wear tefillin at night? And Lila, yes, it's man tefillin, or Lila loves man tefillin? So it seems a somewhat of a still.
The Milah Lahedja, which the Aruch HaShulchan indicates, is it seems clear to him she Rambam mefarish perish acher b'gemara ba'ofen d'zehu afilu l'man da'amar laila lav's man tefillah. It would seem that you have to understand that the Rambam in this Halacha Yud Aleph is saying something entirely different. If you go back now and look, remember the machlokas in the Gemara. Some say that Laila is Zman Tefillin, and some say that Laila isn't Zman Tefillin. The Gemara would feel, the Rambam would feel, that when he is saying that Misha Hiniach Tefillin Kodem Shetishka Chama, one who goes ahead and puts on Tefillin before Shir and keeps it on him all night, okay, is Muta. So he seemingly is learning the Gemara that it doesn't matter whether you hold that Laila is Zman Tefillin or Laila is not Zman Tefillin. That either way it is Muta. Why? Because of a different concept altogether. And that's the Shmiras Tefillin. Mm-hmm. That you're able to keep it. And the Kedusha of Tefillin, you're able to keep it. That both of these Shitas would be Moda. That Tefillin at night is Muta, as long as you know, as long as you tell, that this is the way it is. Let's pick it up at the end, Halacha Ches, or Simon Ches on the next page. Because of Rabbeinu Abbas Yosef, Yesh Misha Omer, to those who say, Shehinis Palev Tfilas Arvis Miba Od Yom. Shidab Marev, according to Rabbi Yehuda, Plaga Mincha, let's say. Right after Plaga Mincha. Ad Shelo Yiniach Tfilin. But that day he didn't have Tfilin. And it's still daytime. Is Ein Lo Lahanicham Achar Kach, Ad Kan Nishana. You're not supposed to go ahead and after Meir, even though the sun is still shining, put on tefillin. Mm-hmm. Why? You've gone ahead and you've already declared that as far as you're concerned, it's Laila. And here, what you're having here, you have Rabbi Yehuda's Kula to daven Meir even when it is, what? When it is daytime. That's a Kula. And you have the Kula of being able to put on tefillin when it is what? When it is daytime. Even though what? Even though you declared it nighttime. But it's still daytime. And you can't do that. They contradict one another. You see, what is it? Is it the reality that it's night? It's legally night? Or is it the reality that it's legally day? If the reality is that it's legally night, then you can put on tefillin. If the reality that it's legally day, you can't have mar. You see. Therefore, says the Beis Yosef, if he personally didn't daven Ma'ariv yet, having come in and not had tefillin, even though in the shul the minyan davened already, nonetheless, he wasn't part of the minyan, is mutar laniach tefillin. He can put it on because it's still day. Others who hold that if you think it's still day, Uberach, and you made the brachas, Ubeemet, have a laila, and it truly is nighttime, is Einol Chayav Levarech Bayom, you don't have to go ahead and make a bracha that day, Kevin the Kaimel and Kerov HaPoskim, because we hold that laila loves man tefillin. The laila's man tefillin, it's okay.
Then you make a bracha by day the next morning.
That's right, and Lila's man tefillin, and Lila's already part of the next morning, so you put on tefillin for the next morning, so you don't have to make a bracha.
But tefillin, you're keeping them on all night.
No, you don't have to keep them on all night.
I take them off.
Yeah, for that day you put it on, and it's after you take them off, and for that day you put it on, albeit you've started at night.
Wait. You're in shul.
Yeah.
You're wearing tefillin.
Yeah.
You have to go out for a minute. You take them off.
Uh-huh.
You come back and put them on again.
Yeah.
You don't make a bracha again when you put them
on? I can't. That's a different parsha altogether. The Golan holds, the Vilna Golan holds, and again it's a machlokas in Gemara. Every time you put on tefillin, you say a bracha. Take it off 20 times a day. Others hold, you're required to put on tefillin once a day. Okay? You take it off, and v'lo hisiach da'ato, you don't have to make another bracha. Take it off, hisiach da'ato, and you want to put it on again, and you have to make another bracha. But here we're going to assume that you only have to put on tefillin once a day. Correct?
Mm-hmm.
And you put it on, and it was nighttime already.
Okay.
You didn't think it was nighttime. The next morning is still the same day. That day you fulfilled the mitzvah. You see. Are you sure you can go ahead and put it on in the morning because you're going to go to shul and daven, but you don't make a bracha. You don't make a bracha because it may be a bracha levatah. It's a suffix whether you need a bracha because that day, this day, you put on tefillin already.
Is a bracha she'eino tzaricha different from the concept of a bracha
levatah? There are only subtle differences. Bracha she'eino tzaricha means you didn't have to say this bracha and you went ahead and you said it. Bracha levatah means a bracha in a general sense. It has absolutely no use. Now, by that, we could mean several things. Bracha levatah is a useless bracha because you said hamotzi over an apple. It's useless. So it's the wrong kind of a bracha. Well, bracha levatah can be also you were holding an ice cream cone and you were just going to say the shahakal over it and you take the cone and put it into your mouth. But instead of getting to your mouth, it fell on the floor and you no longer can eat the ice cream that's not rolling in the sand on the beach, you see. So it was truly a bracha levatah. It was for nothing. Absolutely for nothing, you know. And it does happen, let me tell you. It really does happen. So it isn't entirely a bracha she'eino tzricha, you see. Bracha she'eino tzricha means that you just didn't have to say bracha. And this is what you're saying here. This is what you're saying. Okay. Yeah.
And then I forget. And I make a shakol or a kriya gama or something.
Bracha she'eino tzricha. You just had
what
no.
What does that mean? What is the status of that? Is that
similar to a bracha levatah? Yeah, definitely similar to a bracha levatah. Without question. Now, to end this off, on tefillin at night, v'da'a, you must know, sh'amekubalim nisilu, in Kabbalah, we are warned, sh'lo liyos alav tefillin b'layla under any circumstances. And surely not, v'gam lo yisfalel arvis v'hem. Because let's say if you daven Ma'ariv during the day, right after Tfilas Mincha, and you're wearing tefillin, so you're davening Ma'ariv during the day, it's not at night, but you're davening Ma'ariv. So either way, said the Mekubalim, certainly not at night, and they were very, very machmir with this, and certainly not to daven Ma'ariv with, and to daven Ma'ariv means that you have a Ma'ariv that's been davened before Shkia. But like here, it's possible to say that maybe in Kabbalah they hold Kalambam, they hold like Kalambam that Min HaTorah loves Man Tfilinu. That nighttime is not Zman Tefillin at all. And this is the machlokas, whether the Rambam holds that the Zman is intrinsic or not, has an intrinsic feature or not. Now, that you see in Halacha Yud of the Rambam, in Perek Daled Halacha Yud. Okay? When the Rambam writes there before, Zman Halachas Tefillin is Bayom. Hello, Balai. Kabbalim say, just like the Rambam, you don't put it on at night. And Ma'ariv is a kahiyas of nighttime. Ma'ariv establishes nighttime, so that if you have it on during Ma'ariv, you shouldn't have it on. Rambam learns this, Shenema mi yamim yamima. Chukazol hi mitzvah tefillin. You see. And because of that, because Mida Araisa, at least, the Rambam learns that tefillin are not allowed at night. So by extension, the chayim shabbosos the yomim tovim enam zman tefillin. Shenema v'hoya la'os al yadecha, and shabbosos the yomim tovim hen atzma ma'os. And therefore you don't have it on your Shabbos. No. So you start with night, you establish what the Torah means, then from night you progress on to Shabbos and to Yom Tov. Now,